This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So I read in the press kit, is it true that you wrote a advice column for teenage girls when you were a teenager?
You know, it wasn't exactly that straightforward, but certainly a version of that is true, which is that I went to a school in Santa Monica called Crossroads.
Oh, yeah.
That is very Hollywood, perhaps embarrassingly so. and I started writing like a column that was sort of a very one-to-one essay about high school and about my experience. And the way that I was writing it was that I was writing about people in our school,
uh-oh,
but not using their name. So it became like a very controversial little piece. And at the beginning of each month, they'd like all the kids would like rush to read the school newspaper to see like who I had either made fun of or explained that I was in love with in the course of this article.
So it really wasn't advice.
Yeah, it wasn't advice, but all of it sort of tended toward a very like the broader themes, and certainly there was a philosophical aspect of, you know, talking about growing up, you know. Certainly, yeah, growing up in L.A. and the sort of cinematic experience of that, you know.
So this was kind of autobiographical for you?
This was. I mean, it may be too autobiographical. What may not be as obvious is that while the Adam character is very much me and has a lot of, you know, parallels to my life, all the other characters do as well. And in fact, the two women just as much. You know, the Meg story is very much about a particular time in my life dealing with Hodgkin's disease, going through the experience of being treated for Hodgkin's disease. And I wanted to write about that in a way that wasn't literally about myself, you know. And I wanted to see if maybe I could expand to something a little broader. And then the Lucy character is also about yet an earlier period in my own life a little bit, and about certain feelings of shame and sexual confusion that I've experienced, and that I've, you know, that I hope there's some universal ideas in there about trying to figure out your identity a little bit and wrestling with your parents' identity too. So, you know, all of them, and oddly enough, like the character who sounds most like me in day to day is Grandma. Absolutely. Like that is, if you were to spend 2 hours with me, you'd think like this is Olympia Dukakis.
You go to the door without your pants.
Absolutely. With no pants, and I'm, you know, I'm like out of control. Well, so many things. I mean, I have to say that the first biggest challenge was finding a guy. You know, Meg Ryan, when I finished the script, it seemed to me that I had almost unconsciously written it for Meg Ryan. And I had not been thinking of her while I was writing, but when I was done, it just seemed so obvious. And through a lot of happy, very lucky accidents, the movie sort of gained a little momentum, you know, between Castle Rock and Warner Independent. And we were in a position to take the script to Meg Ryan when there was something behind it, and we could say to her, like, this is a real thing. This isn't something you would need to get going. And she really responded to the character. She responded in exactly the way that I'd hoped and fantasized she would. And the moment that happened, it really started to solidify. And then it became clear that our whole issue was finding this guy, you know, because I really do feel like as much as Jerry Maguire or Risky Business or whatever the movie, it's really the soul of it has to be in this guy and his journey, you know, and how he reacts to these women and how he's able to, you know, hopefully be generous with these women in a way that they need at that particular moment in their lives, you know. And so we looked for a long time. We looked for like 2 months, and I met everyone in New York and L.A., and I could not find a guy, you know, and I was getting nervous about how to make the movie, you know, especially since Meg and Kristen sort of fell into place, and they're both really dynamic screen presence, you know. They're actors with whom I think there's a real, you need to have something to hold the screen with those two people, you know. There needs to be a real quality there because they are magnetic. And we kept looking, and then eventually we decided that we were going to see if we could maybe consider some television actors that weren't available to us and that wouldn't be available to us for at least 8 months. And Adam and I sat down at the Coffee Bean on Sunset in Fairfax, and then promptly left to go to a bar. And it was the first meeting that I had in this area of consideration, and we canceled the rest, and I knew he was the guy, you know. Because it is, and I mean, I think it's obvious. Hopefully it's obvious in the movie, and it's certainly obvious from seeing him that he is, you know, he is a John Cusack type. He does have something about him that you can relate to that, you know, is very rare and special.
So after you were shooting, or during you were shooting, you and Adam were really the only guys on set.
Really were. You know, it was so funny because occasionally for like a moment we'd have a guy like, you know, Clark Gregg, who oddly enough was the only actor that I knew I wanted to write a part for. I was a huge fan of Clark Gregg from various things, but most significantly from Sports Night and The West Wing. And he came onto set for maybe 4 days, and you could see Adam and I were just so enamored of him. We were just so relieved to have like a dude there to talk about movies with.
And then you remained friends.
We've remained friends since. I mean, I'm sure it'll be over after this weekend because, you know, who knows how we'll do, and he'll probably abandon me for, you know, Jason Reitman. But, you know, other than that, we've remained very close. It's so much that it's almost hard to quantify. You know, I've been on movie sets really as early as my memories take me. You know, that they involve movie sets, certainly in part. And, you know, my parents really made an effort to take my brother and myself with them when they would go somewhere when they were young. And, you know, there was very little... There was no nannies in my family, you know. We were always on the set. And, you know, so the result is that slowly and increasingly over the years, Jake and I started to express a real interest in the machinations of how it works, of shooting, literally being on the set and how the day works and what your concerns end up being, you know. And I have to say that you show up, I mean, the intensity with which those anxieties present themselves aren't clear until you're actually there and you're the guy, you know. But I did feel like I had this incredible preparation for what it was, the idea of getting your day and the idea of feeling like you maybe didn't get everything you needed and how the thing's going to cut together and all of that, you know, way more than my year of film school comes from growing up in this household. And also, I mean, even more profoundly, I think, this idea of writing incredibly personal screenplays that are about the values and concerns that you have in your life is certainly something that wouldn't have happened if not for my father and the movies he'd made, you know.
When you were a kid on the set all the time, you know, everyone as a kid has a memory as a child has that embarrassing moment, you know, with their parents or whatever. Did you ever like walk into the middle of a shot?
The thing that I feel that my whole life will be most famous for was this, you know, the first scene of The Big Chill is the baby singing in the bathtub, which is me, you know, and so, but I remember, I have a very vivid memory, of sitting in this bathtub, and it was a fake bathtub, and being naked, which is, I mean, don't even get me into the parental issues that inspires, but I was naked and singing in the bathtub, and I was like totally freaked out, and they sort of talked me through it, but in retrospect, like, they were just, like, they powered through, you know?
Are you comfortable in a nest of women? I mean, you know, older, younger?
You know, I certainly designed this for that reason, and I wanted to be, and I feel like to a certain extent I am, though certainly the ideas about understanding and a deeper understanding of people, I still feel, as much as I think the character is supposed to, that, you know, there's so much that I don't know, and there's so much I don't understand, and it's sort of, I hope the movie is sort of about the struggle to understand that stuff and ultimately some sort of peace in that you can never really be wise, you know, or at least you never really, you know, get it.
Are you surprised that your first film is a, you know, quote-unquote chick flick?
Totally shocked. In fact, I mean, that's another thing, which is that when I wrote the script and when we went into developing it with Warner Independent, it was really designed to be a small, independent film. It was a hard R-rated movie, and the the language was very explicit, and there was, you know, there was explicit scenes. And what happened was that in my decisions to use Meg and Adam, and even Kristen, though Meg and Adam primarily, and because those two parts are so enormous, a sort of sweeter tone emerged from the movie than I had anticipated it would be ever, you know, and that was not, it's not what I'm like in life exactly, and certainly I sort of had a moment in the middle where I thought, like, well, I can either embrace this or try to force it into something that it clearly will never be, you know? And so we did, and in fact, to the extent of making changes in the script to better suit the movie that we had, were clearly making, you know? And hopefully that's good, but when it all, I mean, I knew the movie was going to be called In the Land of Women, and I knew that that would be interpreted any number of ways, but I did not have any idea that I would be, like, you know, entering the Nancy Myers canon of cinema.
Olympia seems like the perfect Jewish grandmother. I was like, and
unbelievable.
She is, you know, kind of you, but how much is?
Well, she's the most straightforward character in the movie because she is absolutely half me and half my father's mother, who is, you know, feisty and hilarious and sort of surprisingly wise in moments and just totally out there. And she and I have a relationship that is not incredibly close, but we really like each other and we get along, and it seemed clear that this was something that I wanted to write about a little bit.
Do you believe... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, could you talk about your writing process and how long did it take you to get, you know...
Absolutely. This one is funny because, you know, I've been working in television for several years. I started out on Freaks and Geeks, and then I went on and spent a couple of years working on Dawson's Creek, which was a great experience because it was a show that almost no one I knew was going to be watching, and it allowed me the opportunity to experiment and do a lot of work and a short period of time and really just try things and hear how dialogue sounded a little bit. And then after that, I came out of it and I wrote a couple of pilots, and in both the pilots I'd written, there was sort of an emerging story that I clearly wanted to tell about an older woman and a younger man, and that story involved them running into each other and going for a walk together, and that was related to something that had happened in my life, though not a sexual thing certainly, but sort of a moment in my life, and I'd been writing some version of that story for about 2 years. This script, that said, wrote in about 4 weeks. You know, it was the fastest I've ever written anything, and I guarantee it's the fastest I ever will. It's it was just because this element was so clearly mapped out to me, the rest of it sort of took shape around that, you know.
Who have been the most influential woman in your life?
Well, certainly the most influential woman, no question, is my mother. I mean, she is, you know, she's a huge part of my life. We're very involved, and, you know, and in a strange way, the movie has a lot to do with our relationship, because I think that the issue of, I hope that the Kristen Meg story, if is really about trying to be generous with the people that love you and the people that are generous to you, and I think that's a real thing, and it's certainly something I hope people get from the movie a little bit, and she has been my role model for that in every way. I mean, she has a selfless quality to her that I admire, and I don't understand, and I can't, you know, I can never believe the extent to which she's, especially, you got to imagine, you know, between my brother, my father, and I, it's just a neurotic, artistic household. She's holding it together with both hands.
People just destined to meet at a time when they can help each other?
I don't. I mean, that certainly hasn't been my experience. I love it in movies,
yeah,
you know?
Okay.
And for me, that is like, you know, if there is a suspension of disbelief that you want to take to your movies, or if there's a way in which life is not as good as the movies, it's that kind of thing. It's the serendipity of meeting people when you want to. And, you know, that's happened to me occasionally, but mostly it's not like that, you know? Yeah, I mean, I'm writing so slowly, and I mean, I guess I'm trying to write something personal and something even more personal than In the Land of Women, and I mean, at this point in my career, I'm focused, not just because I'm, you know, trying to imagine how this movie will be received, but really for larger reasons of Hollywood and the careers of my brother and my father, I'm trying to imagine a way to make movies even cheaper than this. I mean, and this movie was made for, you know, like $10 million, which for a Warner Brothers movie is extraordinarily low, you know. But I do think that obviously the business is heading toward a place where in order to do this kind of work, character work, and about these kind of ideas, the smaller you can do it, the more freedom you have to really, you know, explore that kind of stuff.
Did you finish your high school?
You know, I finished a version of it, and it was, first of all, it was absurdly expensive because at the center of it, in the first 20 minutes, there was a sequence that actually came out of something that I was aware of in a real thing that was going on when I was a teenager in high school, which was that there were these kids would take their parents' sports cars. Talk about your overprivileged, nutso LA thing. But they would take their parents' sports cars and race them down Sunset Boulevard at like 2 in the morning in the most dangerous way in the world, right? Just reckless, risking the lives of everyone on the road. And that image was always essential to that story and almost unshootable, you know? It was so massive in scale. And so that the version of that story that I was talking about in the movie, I don't think we'll ever see. But certainly aspects of it will just keep popping up in my work. I do, you know, directing, there's ways in which directing is way more fun, you know, because it's collaborative and you get the benefit of a lot of incredibly talented people sort of helping you to create something, you know, it's sort of like the best cheat in the world. You get all these brilliant craftsmen helping you create this thing and giving you all this input. And at the same time, writing is, I think I identify myself primarily as a screenwriter, you know, I think that that's where, certainly where it begins for me, and since, you know, whenever you finish one of these things, you're right back there. It's sort of where it ends, too, you know. So that's sort of how I think of myself. But I love directing.
What kind of input did your female actors give you, particularly Meg? I mean, was there something about her character that she said?
She did. You know, it's interesting because Meg has a very... Maggie spent a lot of time thinking about some of these issues, and certainly related to fidelity and marriage and relationships. She's led a life very much in the public eye and dealt with a lot of these things in the most public way that one can. So you can see her that even despite how, you know, what an assault that must be, she has a very kind of straightforward, very kind of objective way of looking at relationships in her life, and she's clearly still trying to figure out what all of that means. And I think that since the movie is trying to figure those things out, she really responded to that, and sort of the search is evident in her face, you know, the kind of quest to be more enlightened even. And then the cancer thing, you know, is something she did a lot of research, and she met a lot of women, and she really kind of, I think, got into that, you know. And part of our dialogue was sort of the comparison between the experiences she was hearing about from breast cancer survivors and my own experience and the experiences that I'd heard about, and we sort of, between those two things, sort of figured out a voice that we felt like we hoped would represent something pretty accurate to that experience, you know.
How close is the girl with the two guys, one's the football player, one's
yeah.
the friend. Is that from your life, too?
No. I mean, that, in fact, if anything, is the most movie conventional thing in the world. And it's like, you know, and that is a thing that I love in movies. And I love the dynamic of there's two guys, and there's one she should obviously be with, and there's the one she shouldn't, and she doesn't get it till the end, and then she does get it. And that I think, only happens in the movies, and I love it when it does, you know.
Talk about, you worked on Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about working on the show? And
you know, I had an incredible experience. And another thing that should be mentioned is that Freaks and Geeks sort of facilitated all the TV work that I did after, and perhaps, you know, in some way, everything that followed. Because I was at NYU, and I was studying film, and I'd written a couple of screenplays, and I'd been working pretty steadily. And my brother directed the pilot for Freaks and Geeks. And they never expected to get picked up. It was one of those shows that no one on earth thought they were going to pick up. And when they did, they were sort of shocked and delighted and in this great period of trying to figure it out. And, you know, they thought that there would be some real value. Judd, particularly Judd and Paul Feig, who really were the creative force behind the show, felt that there'd be some value in having someone fresh out of high school, you know. The only flaw in that plan is that the show was really about growing up in the 80s. So the references that they're making were totally to their lives, and what I had to offer was maybe not necessarily that useful. But the effect was that I was assigned a script that was literally the last script in the rotation, and you know, that we ever shot. And I ended up being able to spend the entire time, that entire 5 months, whatever it was, really present for every second of it. And while I feel like my contribution was minimal, it was definitely the most intense learning experience you can have. And it was great to be, and you know, to be associated with something that people really liked. It's great. It's very satisfying, you know, but I certainly can't take any of the credit, you know.
We're going to be wrapping it up in a couple of minutes.
Okay. You know, there was almost no reaction in Cannes. You know, none of us went. It was at the it was at the film market at Cannes, and not at the in the actual festival. You know, which is I guess akin to the AFM here. You know, and so there was like a booth and a poster and like one guy, one foreign sales rep. You know, and the only effect of it was this review in Variety that I sort of thought was nice, and sort of he got it a little bit. And, you know. It was certainly like a tiny bit of good feeling, but there was almost no reaction. I mean, what's been going on in the year since Cannes is this sort of very slow search for a date, you know, which, given the way the movie evolved, starting at Warner Independent and then becoming sort of distributed wider by Warner Brothers, it was like it was never it wasn't greenlit with a date in mind, you know. So which is a tough thing in the studio system. Usually these movies are very clear, you know. I was talking to my brother last night, and he's got a movie coming out in President's Day, and they're already sending him posters. It's like unbelievable, you know. So it's usually that date is sort of it's certainly ballpark. There's a sense, and this movie didn't have that. So there was a lot of downtime of just trying to find a weekend where they could put us out there, you know.
Which one of your dad's movies would be the kind of closest to the kind of movie you would want to make?
Well, you know, that's a tricky question because I'm a huge fan. You know, it's weird, but I am. Putting aside that he's my father, I'm a huge fan. And like, because I think like, you know, to me, Body Heat is maybe perhaps the most elegantly designed of all those movies, you know, and it's very muscular, and you can't aspire to much more than that. But the kind of storytelling that's in Grand Canyon and The Big Chill is really what this movie is akin to, I think. You know, that's the personal stuff. Those are the voices that I really like. And I'd also love to write Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know?